A little bit of a content warning note for listeners who might find discussions of trauma to be upsetting. Please listen with care. Welcome back to Making an Artist. I'm your host, Shanna Shrum, creator of Life of the Potty and coach to women-identified creators. On today's episode, we have the second part of my conversation with writer Britt Julius. In it, we talk about Sade, giving creative projects the space and time needed. I found this episode really inspiring to listen to, and I hope you'll feel the same.
Let's circle back to Sade.
Yeah. That's always fun.
I know. So as an artist, yeah, like, deeply, deeply love and appreciate Sade. Like, one, her music's amazing.
Right.
But two, her ethics as an artist, mm-hmm, her integrity,
yeah,
and how she's like, no, I will only put out an album when I so choose.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, yes, Sade. Yes. And we will be here for, mm-hmm, you. We, like, this, which I wonder if this is probably true for, like, the writing world, like, this idea of consistency,
yeah,
and how you have to constantly produce. And I think Sade was just like, oh, fuck that. Mm-hmm. Like, she was like, no, I'm going to go have my kids,
yeah,
and have my family. And in about a decade,
yeah,
I'll give you all an album. And then when Ava DuVernay calls,
like, yeah, sure,
I too will show up because I want to.
Yeah.
You know, and I, like, that's the kind of life that I want to live as an artist.
Oh my God, that'd be amazing.
Right?
Because I feel like it's so, I mean, for me, it's like, as a writer, so much of, I'm like constantly, I constantly have at least like 5 open stories at any given time. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, right now, I think I probably have like 9 or 10,
mm-hmm,
right? And so I always have this high number, and there's always just like the stress and this pressure, and all the stress and pressure from those other things oftentimes distracts or deters me from the art that I really want to create.
The truth.
Yeah.
Honestly.
You know, like,
right.
And so I absolutely admire that, because she's giving her art the amount of time
and
to,
the space that it needs.
And the space, yeah.
Right. To be really great.
Mm-hmm.
Because when she does put out those albums, they're like masterpieces.
They are.
Like, and they're not chipped away chunks of, mm-hmm, brilliance. They're fully formed,
absolutely,
masterpieces.
Yeah, and when she was younger in the 80s, she, you know, her and the group, they released like a couple, you know, they released like albums pretty frequently, but it wasn't until like the 90s where like she sort of took this step back, and realized the pace was not good for her, whether it was because of like she was raising her kids or just like for like, you know, artistically reasons.
She needed, well, because that's the thing too, is we need space to grow and experience life, mm-hmm, so that we can continue to create. Like, mm-hmm, I wrote a sketch in like, I don't know, November, December, whatever. And it took me 2 months to find the ending.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, well, because I had to go out and like live a little bit of life and I like have my subconscious figure some shit out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could go in and finish this piece.
Yeah.
But like, if I was on some kind of deadline instead of my own, like, you know, say I was on SNL, I was like, well, this would probably come out half formed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I had that realization making it. You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
I think so much of being an artist is growing,
mm-hmm,
and growth isn't linear, and it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. I mean, I think of when I was in college and just getting out of college, I had already wanted to write like a book of essays. Like,
yeah.
I knew that's because I had been doing that when I was in college, right?
Right.
On my blogs. And I had an idea for it, and I was kind of like framing how it wanted to be, and you know, it kind of made sense at the time, but did it really make sense? I don't know. And I had that sort of yearning for it, and it's crazy because looking back on my life now and looking back in my 20s now, I can very much sort of see, oh, the things that you actually really needed and truly to write about that would really define you as an artist could not have happened until you had this amount of time to grow into your writing voice, into,
right,
you know, your processing of experiences, mm-hmm, you know, because when I was younger, my processing of experiences was immediate. Do you know what I mean?
Well, your experiences were limited.
Exactly. It was always like immediately write something down in my journal and put it online and write Tumblr and blah, 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 you know.
Yeah.
And like after I had, after I was,
you know, attacked on the train, mm-hmm. I started sort of, because it was so, that was such an incomprehensible experience right. for me.
It's so hard to make sense of.
Yeah, it was so hard to make sense of that it took me, so, like, I thought I was fine, like, a week later. I was like, I'm fine. I had a friend's wedding. Like, I'm good. I'm there's no, whatever. Like, which I'm just walking around common. Minneapolis, like, and, like, you know, went to the CPD, you know, and they're like, and I was like, oh, that's the guy, you know, whatever. Like, and so, and so, they're like, okay, well, we're right. going to find it. Like, I thought it was fine. But I spent the next 3 years
not being fine,
yeah. but not really realizing it. But I kept right. on writing these essays that I thought were about one thing mm-mm. and always coming back to this thing, like writing an essay about being one of the most frequent Lyft users in Chicago and going right. to a roundtable about that and realizing, oh, I was always taking Lyft because I was too afraid to take the train because yeah. that's where I was attacked.
Yeah.
Or, you know, writing something about the first residency I took, which was a couple months after I had been assaulted, and the experience of, like, you know, public trauma versus private trauma. Like, it was all of these things. And I was like, oh, that's funny. I just keep on writing these essays about,
I don't know,
like,
what's happening.
What is this?
I don't get it. And was, like, your therapist just like, mm-hmm.
Like, she was just like, she's like, it's going to take a while to process yeah. this. And I was like, no.
And I think too, when it comes to trauma like that, it's so you can still function.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can't fully take it on.
Yeah.
Or else you'll shut down.
I mean, and that's what my book is about. It's because, oh. because all of these, you know, it's framed around these essays yeah. that I wrote over the last, like, 3.5-4 years. And it's about the ways in which I basically functioned after trauma and yeah. how so often narratives that we see about sort of overcoming traumatic experiences 100%. In our life are just like, you know, and then I climbed the mountain.
And then everything was okay.
And it was beautiful.
And that's not, you know, how it works.
No.
It's also like what you're talking about too, and I feel like I want to give a little space to this right now, is like after a trauma occurs, everybody expects the trauma victim to act a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's like for Law and Order SVU. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not for real life.
Yeah.
Trauma victims aren't going to act a certain way for you. Mm-hmm. They're not going to perform some kind of victim response for you.
Yeah.
They're, like, literally trying to just hang on.
Absolutely.
And do the best that they fucking can.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I don't know. I wanted to give space to that because I think it's just something that in our culture, we want to have this, like, really neat bow mm-hmm. narrative that it's like, oh, she was attacked and then she ran a marathon mm-hmm. and saved her own life. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, no, motherfucker, that's not how it happens.
Yeah.
I have to go and look for a fucking therapist.
Yeah.
I have to go and, like, just do all this deep, dirty, gnarly work.
Yeah. I mean,
and then you still are going to be, you know, then you're still dealing with this shit.
I mean, that was literally, like, that was what it was like for me, because it was, so I had a therapist before I had been attacked.
Right.
So I was really grateful to have her.
To have somebody then. Right. You didn't have to go find somebody right away.
Because I got this therapist maybe like a year into working at Groupon.
Because you're like, this job is terrible.
It wasn't even about the job. Well, a lot of it was about the job, but a lot of it was basically what had happened is I was dating a guy and we stopped seeing each other. And all of a sudden I just, like, woke up one Monday when I was supposed to go to work after we kind of ended things, and I couldn't get out of bed.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't get out of bed because I was so depressed. I was like, oh no. I was like, I just can't, I can't function. Like, I just was, like, in a daze.
Yeah.
And I was like that for, like, a good 3 or 4 days.
Oh, wow.
And I was sort of like, I was like, oh, I'm like, I'm really, like
maybe this isn't okay.
Yeah. I was like, this, like, good. Like, I haven't checked again, in with my
that,
job.
It's that you were still trying to kind of fight it, mm-hmm. like fight the trauma of being depressed. You're like, oh, like, you know, it's cool to just, like, lay in bed for, like, you know, a week.
That was, I mean, it was literally, I was like, oh, it's Thursday. I was like, I'm sick, right? And I was like, no, you're not sick. Yes. And you know, you're not fucking sick. And you know something's going on. So anyway, so I had this therapist, and a lot of what we did was work through work trauma and childhood trauma, because I'd been, like, molested as a child, mm-hmm. and how that sort of, like, related to how I approached men in all these situations. Right. So I was really grateful to have her when I had been, assaulted. But it was a sort of thing for me where it was like, you know, she had told me that it was not going to resolve itself really cleanly
right.
and really easily. And I did not listen to her. But I also knew that, like, you know, I was making all of these, it was an internal struggle, because I was making so many decisions because I had to keep going on.
Right.
I had to keep making money. I had to keep working. Like, that, there was no choice. Like, that was the fucking matter. I had to keep writing.
I have a line in a story that I tell. It's like, I don't have time for an emotional hangover, Janet. I have a Netflix account to feed.
I mean, that was literally it. I was like,
you have to still show up. So you have to compartmentalize and put some shit aside for like 8 hours a day so you can go get a fucking paycheck.
Exactly.
And have a roof over your head.
This was like right after I had been like, right after I had left Groupon. And I was about to start, like, I was attacked, like, a week before I was supposed to start a new job.
Oh, God.
And I couldn't just, like, not start the new job because I needed some fucking money.
Yeah.
And so I really compartmentalized things. Right. But the more days and weeks passed, I realized you need to work through this. And I thought, like, maybe I'll just, like, write one. Like, I wrote something after it happened, but sure. I wasn't satisfied in terms of sort of really processing it.
Something
you know?
Like that.
Yeah. And so I kind of had to realize that I had to just, you know, however it came to me, I would just keep exploring those things and allow myself the time to keep exploring those things. And so I just started building this intense body of essays that I was then performing in the live lit community.
I've seen some, they're beautiful.
Yeah. And it was like, that was the first thing that, first storytelling show that I ever did. Cause I had applied to a whole bunch of storytelling shows, just like on a whim. Mm-hmm. Like that's a whole other story. But I had applied to them and I got into all of them. So I had all these.
So you're like, I'm busy now.
I was like, okay. And I was going to read some whole other thing or whatever before this one show. But then I had been attacked like a week and a half before. And so I was just like, so I went to like the show, you know, and I was like, I know I'm supposed to be reading this thing about
but like house music. Changed.
Yeah, I was like, I wrote something else like an hour before. And they're like, what? And I was like, don't worry about it. Like, it was just it was fine. And I read this essay about how I started kind of obsessively reading romance novels in like the last week and a half after this attack. And it went over really well. And people were like, this is like beautiful and powerful. And,
how did that feel for you? Like, how did it feel for you?
It was cathartic. Mm-hmm. And that's what storytelling was for me. And that's what writing is for me as well. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, almost 4 years after that whole incident and the first, you know, time I started writing about this kind of stuff, for me, it has shown me that it is okay to take time to process things, and it is okay to take time to work on my art, you know, because I am so constantly in the mindset of, you know, working with a quickness.
Produce.
Absolutely.
Very capitalist.
Especially as a writer on the internet, that's all we do, you know?
Yeah. Oh, because it's turn and burn.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. And but I can't do that with this kind of writing.
No. It means so much to me. No. This needs attention and time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've tried like kind of pitching some of these stories to like outlets, and then I'll kind of be in the editorial process and they'll be like, well, change it like this and do this and do that.
And you're like, this is too personal. Yeah. You can't change it.
I'm like, this is my life. And I was like, and so I kind of realized, I'm like, oh, these are, it has another meaning.
That's not the space for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Absolutely.
So I feel very confident that you'll find the space for it.
I hope so.
I'm going to predict here that this literary agent going away is going to create space for the correct agent.
Yeah.
Or access point or whatever you want to call it. To have this piece come to light, because I think we're probably like right in a very perfect time for it to come about.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because I feel like
you heard it here first.
You heard it here first. This is we'll come back to this when I'm
it's March 7th
2018.
So mark my motherfucking words. Okay. Yeah.
Hey, do you like what you're hearing? If so, pop on over to patreon.com/lifeofthepotty. This podcast is listener supported, so anything you can support us with would be 100% greatly appreciated. We would love to hear from you.
But I loved what you said about Sade, because sometimes when art is really important to you,
you take your time.
You take your time, and it deserves to have that time and attention paid to it. And, and sometimes it takes you a long time to understand and realize that.
It takes you a long time to understand and realize that, and it takes you a long time to grow and learn and heal enough. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's another thing to talk about around when you're writing pieces around trauma.
Yeah.
And your pain or personal pieces or whatever, is that sometimes maybe we need a little bit more time mm-hmm. to heal before it can come to light.
Absolutely.
Because, like, you know, putting a super personal piece with, you know, trauma or whatever in it out into an audience that may or may not respect it, if you aren't ready for that, mm-hmm. that could be re-traumatizing.
Absolutely. I mean, it took me almost a year after having a miscarriage mm-hmm. to write about having a miscarriage.
Right.
Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? And I didn't write about it until I had to do a live lit performance.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've been wanting to write about this for a while. And a lot of times what happens when I do certain live lit shows is, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm going to write something new for this. And I kind of just sit down. And mm-hmm. Sometimes it'll only be like 5 or 6 hours before the show. And I start reciting into my phone mm-hmm. because it's easier to just sort of talk than write,
right.
You know, the keyboard.
Well, because there's like an empty page, like an empty screen in front of you.
Yeah.
And when it's just you talking, you're like, oh, it's just me.
Yeah. And it's like the keyboards are another tool, right? Mm-hmm, between mm-hmm. like your mind
yeah,
and
almost,
like,
it's almost
the
an obstacle.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I'll oftentimes just recite. And a lot of times this happens hours before I do these shows. Mm-hmm. I've just been thinking, I'm like, I think I'm ready to write about this. And I take my recorder out, you know, and like, and it's just like, I'm like, oh wow. I just like said like 3,000 words of like a story. And then I kind of edited it all together and it comes out into this, you know, this beautiful thing. And it's just like, and people are like, oh my God, like how long have you been working on that? I'm like, I wrote it 5 hours ago. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, it took that long for me to process it. But once I was ready.
You're like, I've been thinking about this for 3 years, but it came out in an hour.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking
about.
You
know, like, it's like, oh, is there any,
well, we're going to have to go somewhere. Oh,
you know what I mean? But it's like, sometimes.
We just ran out of wine and we went.
Yes, it was.
Look, I live right around the corner from my bar.
but it was like, that's what it oftentimes is for me. It's like, it takes me so months or even a year to process something.
Yes.
But once I'm ready for it to make the art,
mm-hmm.
it
comes right out.
Like it's like, let's go. Like the art's like, it's here we are.
It's like pew, pew, pew.
And I am like astounded because I'm like, how the fuck did you just like get like 4,000 words out? And these are good ass words. Like it's these pieces that I spend a long time processing mm-hmm. that when I like read them back and like, you know, kind of edit them, put them all together, whatever. I'm like, this is the best fucking shit I have written like ever. And it's always like that.
Do you ever go back and read stuff and you're like, who the fuck wrote this?
Yes. Oh my God.
I'm like, who was in here?
Like, who was this person? Like,
what
like,
little elf snuck into my fucking MacBook like last night and made this shit?
I mean,
because I don't get it.
It's like what Julia Cameron says. Like, you have an artist way right there. You know,
she's always near me.
She's I love it. But it's like this. It's like this connection to like a higher, like, you know, consciousness or something. Because it feels. When I'm in that moment, I feel almost like I'm not
in your body.
In my body.
Yeah.
Or in the body. I'm in my body, but I'm not in my normal body, which has this self-doubt and this questioning and this insecurity and this pain. It's like I'm in this creative space and it's so exciting because I'm just like, I get like goosebumps thinking about it now. Like it's so exciting because I don't always get it, but when I'm in it, it's so beautiful and powerful. And I read the words afterward and I'm like, this is exactly it. This is exactly
it. And you almost can look at it as if somebody else wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're like, this is so, you can stand back from your work and say, this is so good.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I didn't have much to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that happen a couple times lately where I feel like it's like this, like, what I think of it when I visualize it, it's like there's like a gold swirl above my head where everybody's creativity is.
Yeah.
And then I just like open this like hole in my head and allowed it to come through.
That's literally how I think of it. Like, I just I think of it as just like this like beam of it's like a beam of light. Like it reminds me of like doing sort of like meditation for like the chakras, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just this like golden beam of light that is like blowing in your head,
fills up my crown.
And it's just flows
through my body.
Powerful. Yeah. And every time I allow myself that space to really create in that method, it gets better and better.
And people respond.
They do. And
they come up to you and mm-hmm. they were like, thank you so much for that. Because what I think is happening in that process is like you separate your ego mm-hmm. and you like connect with the highest part of yourself, like the best business of yourself. And you allow flow, which is the best way I can describe it, to come through. And when through flow is truth and authenticity and no bullshit, right? Like and that's what comes through. And then when you're up on, you know, stage or in your book or mm-hmm. writing or whatever, and that's what comes out, and people are they're lifted by it. That's it's beautiful.
So I mean, you've heard like the latest, you know, or a selection of the latest piece I wrote. I read it at
Happy Hour. Yeah, I loved it. Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was written in that, like, that kind of moment of just, like...
Where it just shoots out.
Shoots out. And it's so... that exactly what you said. It's so authentic and it's so true. And it's this immense, immediate flow where... It's so crazy to me because so much of my day-to-day writing that I do for publications or outlets or whatever that makes me this immediate money is delayed or riddled with this like self-doubt and questioning and insecurity and thinking like, I can't get this done. Mm-hmm, I'm just so bad and so and so. And this writing is never about that because, you know, it's just, and when it comes, it's so, there's no, like you said, there's no ego, there's no doubt, there's no questioning because. It's
just, the best word I can say is just, it's just true.
It's just true. It's just true. And I'm always so like in a moment, at a sense of peace after it's done, because I'm like, oh, this is what I've been trying to say for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And now it's
And you're like,
here.
Oh, I can rest now.
I feel my heart is just like, you know, I feel like emotional, but like, especially this last piece, which is about traveling, you know, I wanted to write this essay about traveling after I got back from like so much travel.
Mm-hmm. This retrospective.
Yeah. Wasn't in the place for it. Uh-uh. Was not in the place for it. And I was like, why can't I get this done? Like, what is this? And it wasn't until this year, this January, mm-hmm. where I was just like I got in that mode and I got it done. Yeah. And then
it comes out so easy.
It's so easy.
And you're like,
so
what the fuck
beautiful.
Was I struggling for?
It's astounding. And it's so, it makes me want to, in those times that I feel so much doubt about my writing, it makes me want to continue writing because I can look at what I've done and see, like, fuck, like, you fucking did that shit. Yeah. Like, God damn it, bitch. Like, you did that shit. And I'm like, wow, like, God damn it. Like, it's so,
I have been kind of haunted by a character I wrote 10 years ago lately because I'm doing all this. I've been doing all this shifting and creating new podcasts and doing a bunch mm-hmm. of different work. And I've been finding myself in like a higher sense of anxiety because I'm doing all this new shit. Yeah. Right. And I created this character 10 years ago. And one of her lines is, stop worrying about what might happen because what might happen is the best part. And I was like, who the fuck wrote that? Who wrote this line when I was 25 that I'm now at 35, like, 25-year-old Chyna didn't know what that meant. like it's been haunting me lately. I can't stop thinking about it, and it's like, I literally am just like, whoa, I can't believe I wrote that 10 years ago. I was a, like,
but it's exciting.
It is exciting, right? And when you were just saying about like looking back at your stuff mm-hmm. and that inspiring you to keep going for it, that's kind of what it's been helping with. Yeah. Like, I look back at that line and that character, and that was the kind of character that people would come up to me and be like, you reminded me of my grandma. You reminded me. She was an old woman. Mm-hmm. And she was dying too.
Yeah.
And I would like, I like channeled being almost dying at 25 and like written this piece about like, don't fucking regret your life. Right. Like make choices that, you know, you want to do and live an exciting life because you only get one, and I'm about ready to fucking kick the bucket. So, and I just keep thinking about that goddamn line.
But it's so, but it's great. I mean, that's a line, you know, that that line had, you know,
like that I didn't line write is, that line.
Yeah. But
like the flow wrote that line.
Well, I was going to say, it's like, you know, that line has truth in it because you can remember it a decade later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's really cool. Like those things that you can still remember, like years after, you know, it actually happened.
And it popped in this moment when I was like really like,
yeah,
you know, and it's like, well, bitch, just fucking relax because what might happen is the best part. Exactly. Don't you know?
Exactly.
And I'm like, get out of here, 25-year-old Shanna. Go have a Smirnoff Ice, you know.
The flow was going to be going.
It didn't matter how many Smirnoff Ices I had. It's still going to get flowing.
Smirnoff Ice.
Well, is there anything that you would like to tell 10 years ago, Brittany, before we wrap it up?
10 years ago, Brittany was 2008. So she was a junior in college.
Okay. So like 21. No, you were 20. Yeah.
I was 20. Mm-hmm. She was a junior in college dating an obscenely skinny communist DJ.
Oh, God. The worst. Was he like terrible at the sex?
Yes, but he was. But. But he was a sweetheart.
Okay, so he's a nice guy and bad at the sex.
He was a nice, sweet
communist,
Eastern European communist DJ who hated America.
Fair.
It was fair. I met him on MySpace.
Oh my God.
And he has happened to go to DePaul as well. But 20-year-old Brittany was, and she was also interning at Being a Scene,
which is an old, it's like a feminist scene, right?
It was a feminist women's music magazine.
Okay,
still cool. Around. It was a really cool space. That was my first editorial internship. And I knew that I wanted to be a writer, but I didn't know how I was going to really make that happen. And so I guess I would, if I was talking to that Brittany.
About to be published in Vogue tomorrow. Talking to
That's
Venus
so crazy.
Zine Brittany.
I was literally talking to Venus Zine Brittany.
Okay.
I would tell her, there will be a lot of people who tell you that you should not keep doing this. Ignore them. Like, don't fucking listen to them. And that's essentially what I did.
Yeah.
But
you would tell her to relax around it.
I would tell her to relax even more and maybe even charge more aggressively into what you want to do. Mm. Because in some ways, I think of myself as a lucky one because I had friends who got similar things from people who were maybe supposed to be their mentors or editors or people they looked up to in the industry who were just like, you know, you should quit writing. You should do so and so. And they did. They quit writing. Mm. They quit doing all these things. You know, they took that word to heart. But
I don't know if that has anything to do with luck. I think that has to do with choice.
I mean, it's choice. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But I mean that I'm lucky in the sense that I had that I was strong-willed enough at that age to be like, instead of being like some of my friends who were like, well, these people told me that I am terrible or it's a bad industry or X, Y, and Z, which I can, as an adult now, can recognize is probably just like older people trying to like get talented people out of the game.
Right.
you know, at that age, I was like, you know, I was a vindictive, I still am a vindictive bitch, but I was a real vindictive bitch when I was a lot younger.
I actually think you're probably like one of the nicest people I know, but okay.
but when it comes to people trying to take like what is right. what I want to do sure. and my livelihood, I get like real. And so at that age, like when I would hear that, I'd be like, not only
right.
am I going to do this,
I'm going to do it 10 times.
I'm going to be in fucking New York Times and Vogue. That's what I'm going to do. You tell me now, it's too hard of an industry. You're not going to make it. You're in Chicago. You didn't go to the right schools. You don't have enough money. You're not cute enough for these things. No one's going to listen to your writing voice. You don't have to be cute. You're a woman trying to be a music writer, and there's only men who are music writers. All of those things. And I, you know, and I would tell the 18-year-old that you will continue to hear this because you are a Black woman mm-hmm. trying to be a writer. And it's like, don't ignore it. Continue to use let it that feed shit your fire. As yes, and it's like because that's what I did. But like really, let it like just it's like yeah. your you know best revenge is your paper, as Queen Bee says, and like really take it to heart.
Best
like,
revenge.
Really take it to heart because if you take it to heart, you will be so mind blown by all of the things that you can accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, yeah, in some ways you're kind of, you know, you're in this on your own because you don't have the right tools or connections or whatever, but you can still fucking do this.
Yes.
It's like, you know that you're in this alone, but you know that you're still fucking capable of getting this shit done.
You can still fucking do this.
You can still fucking do this. It's like, you're like, I'm not New York. I don't have any money. I'm really, you know, I'm really sad.
You can still fucking do this. You can believe you can do it.
Fucking do
you can
it.
Still fucking do this.
And it's like, it's like, you know, 20-year-old Brittany. You know, you can still fucking do this because just getting this little internship anyway.
Yeah.
When all of your other friends who were journalism students couldn't get
partying.
Couldn't get this internship. Right. You already know you can fucking do it.
Yeah.
You know you can.
Yeah.
But you're allowing this other shit to get in. So just like,
put the blinders on and keep mm-hmm. going, baby. Just
let it fuel you.
Ah,
let it fuel you.
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much
for coming on.
Let's go get a glass of champagne. Yay.
Well, that's it, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Music on the episode today was provided and created by the ever wonderful Linen Bone at soundandpatternsmusic.com. Holler at me at lifeofthepotty.com or lifeofthepotty@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Thanks, and as my dad would say, talk at you later.